Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 8th day of May, 2020. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for tuning in, telling a friend, and all that good stuff. It's Friday. Yeah, not that it matters all that much, but there's something psychologically victorious about achieving another Friday, isn't there? Even if, in practical terms, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, you know? Maybe you don't need to put on pants today. Even though you don't need to put on pants every other day, maybe you actually don't do it today. Don't do it. Go pantsless. Hashtag pantsless Friday. I'm Derek Hunter. I'm your host. I don't know if I said that already. It's the Friday interview edition. So those of you who subscribe to the audio edition, you're in for a treat. You don't have to see me. You can just hear me. If you're watching the video, then you're not hearing this intro, and it doesn't even matter. Our guest today is a very interesting talk. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It's the author of a new book, History's 9 Most Insane Rulers, a guy named Scott Rank. He's written 12 books. He did a lot of research into some crazy, crazy people who've been world leaders throughout history because, you know, in the time of coronavirus and even before then, we've heard our liberal friends talk about how Donald Trump is insane. We must invoke the 22nd Amendment. We must remove him. We've got to do this, that, and the other, 25th, whatever it is. You know the drill. Psychologists diagnosing Donald Trump as having mental disorders without ever having met the man, which shows that they, in fact, are the ones with the mental disorders. So you're going to enjoy this. It's funny, it's fun, and it's informative. And so is the book. But it's out Tuesday. You can pre-order it now, and it'll show up at your house. So there you go. Before we get to that, we got to give our hat tip to getthetea.com. Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea. It'll change your life. You get more energy. You get more pep in your step. It's weird how that works. You're eating food, but you feel like you're eating right, but there's something going on. You don't feel like you got all the energy that you should have. Well, it's maybe because your body's a little bit clogged up. The walls are coated on your digestive tract. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. It cleans you out. It's a tea that makes you go. You drink a cup a day. Use as directed. You get a 30-day supply. Drink a cup a day. You'll be going. And not like uncontrollably as long as you follow the instructions. But then you'll notice, hey, wait a second. I'm getting more energy. Why? Because now your body's digestive tract is able to just rip out the nutrition from the food you're putting in. It's not just passing through. You go to getthetea.com, you enter promo code Derek at checkout, click apply, you get free fast shipping on top of everything else. You can't beat the deal. Give it a shot once, you'll be a believer. Okay, it's a fascinating interview. I really did enjoy it. So we're going to get to that very quickly because it went on long. Fridays, I know, you think, oh, it's cheap. It's cheap. You're not doing a whole show. It's a whole show. It's a whole damn show. But I want to point out that Shelley Luther is now ordered, released from prison. The Supreme Court of the state of Texas granted the writ of habeas corpus submitted by the Attorney General, and she is ordered, released. The GoFundMe account, last I checked, and it's been a while since I've checked, was up over $500,000. So good for her and good for everybody. Way to go. A big old middle finger to that douchebag judge. There's also reports that a valet who works for the president has coronavirus, and the left is wondering, will he self-quarantine? We'll find out, but I'm not sure the president really can do that. Might just have to wear a mask. Who knows? But they'll keep testing him. So, yeah, there's stuff going on, but not a ton of stuff going on. Anyway, it is a really good interview. It's an enjoyable interview, an engaging guy. The book, I recommend it, History's 9 Most Insane Rulers, the author, Scott Rank. You're going to enjoy it. Have yourself a wonderful weekend. Seriously, try and enjoy something. Here in Maryland, the governor has granted us permission to go out and play tennis and golf in a weekend when it's supposed to be like 40 degrees. So that's probably not going to happen. Last weekend would have been nice. It was in the 70s. But hey, I'll take it. Next week. There's always another weekend. And there's always another week. I'll be back here on Monday. Now here's Scott Rank, author of History's 9 Most Insane Rulers.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller podcast for the 8th day of May, 2020. It's a Friday. Every day is like Friday, except depressing. I'm Derek. I am your host. As we do every Friday, we bring somebody into our world, pick their brains, find out what they're up to. And this is, of course, no exception since we do it every Friday. Today's guest is an author of more books than I've read, like 12 of them. Scott Rank. We talk about history's greatest monsters, a phrase I use all the time to describe people ironically. This time we're going to actually talk about monsters in history. His new book is History's 9 Most Insane Rulers. We have a president who is often accused of being insane, of being certifiable, of having serious mental issues, of being a dictator. Well, history is riddled with people who actually were those things. And I thought, why not learn about them? It'll be a nice break from the pandemic and all the other insanity. So welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you for having me, Derek. It's awesome to be here.
I like your studio there. You've got a better setup than most guests do. You look prepared. You look like a pro.
Yeah, it's fancy. I mean, sometimes I feel tempted to use a fake Zoom background where I'm in the tropics. But, I think the studio is going to work right now.
A vitamin D from fake sun probably doesn't do immunity that much good, but still. First of all, how are you surviving the pandemic? How are things going in isolation for you?
I think I'm doing okay. The viewers can't see me by nature of a podcast, but I have a mustache, which is how I've been coping with it. And there's always expectations versus reality where I think, man, I'm going to look dashing like a artillery officer in World War I. But I think it came out more like a minor league professional hockey player. So that's how I'm coping with the mustache. But otherwise, not doing too bad. You're holding up okay?
Yeah, not so bad, not so bad. Well, this will be a video, so some people see you. The audio is going to be included. Unless you answered with the camera, right? You did the video chat, correct?
I did. So
okay, good.
Whether I like it or not, it's being recorded.
Yeah, your porn stash, I can see it right now. Well done, Ron Jeremy. My beard's growing back in, and it's growing back in gray. I shaved it a while back out of boredom. We're probably some of history's greatest monster for our facial hair. But there are actual monsters throughout history. First of all, how does somebody decide to write a book about truly awful people? I mean, they make the best documentaries. But if you're going to sit down and write a book with everybody throughout history, what is it about these people that attracted you?
Well, I think the idea came a few years ago. You mentioned people called Donald Trump that. And I think a few months after he was elected, there were a group of psychiatrists who got together, not just a group, but tens of thousands. And they signed a petition and called themselves Duty to Warn. And they said, based on our knowledge of mental illness, Donald Trump is constitutionally unfit to be chief executive. Therefore, we think he should step down. So the reason this was interesting is they were violating something called the Goldwater Rule, where you can't diagnose someone if you haven't personally met him or her. And when I heard that announcement, I thought, well, just leaving Donald Trump aside, if they're thinking that he is a grave existential threat and he's one of the most dangerous politicians, the most insane politicians or presidents we've ever had, dude, I've studied the Middle East. I've looked at sultans. I can think of 10 sultans that are like in a different professional league of craziness than Donald Trump. They bankrupted their empire to decorate their palaces in fur. They killed their brothers. They drowned women in their harem. I mean, that's just the Ottoman Empire. That's what I studied. And then if you open up to just the entire galaxy of people who've ruled, it's uncontestable. Like a guy who recently was the president of Turkmenistan had an 80-foot tall golden statue that always rotated to face the sun. So, I mean, I get it. Donald Trump is unconventional. And with the 2020 election, Joe Biden, who has good evidence he has progressive dementia, people are going to be arguing about mental health. It's the people on the left say Joe Biden or Donald Trump has narcissistic personality disorder. People on the right say Biden has dementia. I'll damn those two with faint praise by saying they can both stand up and give a speech in front of people, which puts them ahead of other people in the past. So I guess that was the idea. I just wanted to give perspective that, yeah, some of our presidents and politicians are weird. I get that. Bernie Sanders can appear really weird to people. Donald Trump can appear weird to people who don't like him. But if we are just opening things up to all of history, it's way worse in the past.
Yeah, but none of those monsters in the past used Twitter or said mean things about CNN. So, you know, what's a little genocide compared to criticizing Jim Acosta, I ask you?
You make a perfect point. I mean, really, the real victims here are the Fourth Estate. I mean, man, they're true heroes now. Yeah,
they're the holy fifth column now. Well, let's get into this, because I want to know a little bit about each of these monsters. And then, you know, obviously each one is their own chapter. There's a lot more information in the book, which you should buy. It's available starting Tuesday. So you can pre-order it now and it'll show up at your house the day that it comes out. Caligula is one of those. He's chapter one, and he's one of those very famous names. His name is now like a verb. It's kind of a descriptor, but I don't think most people know what Caligula actually did. It's just one of those things that you all know the name. Tell us about Caligula.
Caligula was pretty gross. He was he was a Roman emperor. And if people know of him, they might know of the movie starring Malcolm McDowell of Clockwork Orange fame that appeared in the late 70s. Haven't seen the movie. Don't recommend anyone see it. It's basically nasty pornography guised up as a historical biopic. But
wait a second, you're saying people shouldn't watch
it?
It's pornography, and you're okay. I don't know. Okay, whatever.
There's just so many mixed messages.
Says the guy with the porn stash. Don't watch porn from the 70s, no less.
You know, I like to think the edges are clipped short enough to not have it be a porn stash. But you know, I think I'm going to have to tighten it up a little more after the interview. So. Make it a Ron Swanson to
really. Okay, sorry to interrupt you, but it was a horrible movie with Malcolm McDowell.
Right,
and that's
okay.
That's where the knowledge comes from.
All right, so here's what we know about Caligula, and people question the sources, whatever. So he was one of the first emperors after the Augustinian period, which basically means emperors were starting to be worshipped as gods. Caligula openly welcomed this. He would declare that he's divine. He did things like he had a racehorse named Incitatus that he appointed senator. He gave Incitatus a bunch of servants. He had the thing that when people hear about Caligula that they most hear about and think, oh man, he's gross, is a lot of people think he had relations with his sisters. And the weirdest thing he did, when you read accounts of him, he sounds like that kid in that old Twilight Zone episode who had the supernatural powers and would torture people, if you know what I'm talking about.
Could get any wish he wanted granted. Is that the kid?
Yeah, and there's a
and Simpsons, everybody lived in fear of him.
There was a Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode where Bart had the same thing. And it just sounds like one crazy thing to another crazy thing to another crazy thing. And, I mean, one example is there was an astrologer who said that he didn't have any more chance of being an emperor than riding a horse across the Gulf of Baiae, which was a 3-mile long gulf near Naples. So what he did was get as many boats as he possibly could that would stretch along 3 miles, built a bridge across the boats, and then spent about 24 hours riding back and forth on his horse, which basically ruined the grain trade of the Mediterranean and could have triggered a famine. Don't know if this is true or not, but like, and it's just like dozens and dozens of cases like that where somebody insults him. Somebody says, so he orders like constant political assassinations, has people murdered, dresses up as gods, sits in temples, and is killed after 4 years.
He was also a sexual deviant on top of it.
Yeah, that's where people think he loved incest. He had a sister, Drusilla, he really liked. The movie, again, haven't seen it, don't recommend it, but this really lays into all that stuff, like bestiality, necrophilia, all the, just like the grossest pages of psychological disorders is the stuff that he tried to use as a life manual of love. So pretty gross guy, that Caligula.
But did he ever tweet about Jim Acosta? That's the question. Next, we come to King Charles VI of France. Now, the royalty in France, we always think of the very regal Louis, if you will, and our allies in the Revolutionary War. But they have their own history over there. Tell us about King Chucky.
King Chucky, yeah. Good tie-in with the movie. He was somebody who probably was traumatized by his childhood when he was growing up in France. It's the late 1300s, early 1400s. 100 Years' War is going on. That means that people around him, advisors and uncles, are getting killed left and right. And we don't exactly know what happened to him, but his sanity broke at some point in his 20s and 30s. And at some point, he decided and thought and believed that he was made of glass. So what that meant is he told advisors, you can't wear shoes close to me or I might shatter. I can't take any baths because I might shatter. And it's a weird thing because this was.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's weird.
It's a weird thing. Yeah, a little bit. Good Lord.
And the reason why he thought this is. The best explanation I can explain is for a similar reason of why people in trailer parks think that they're abducted by aliens today. And back in the Middle Ages, glass was a metaphor that priests and preachers like to use a lot, that you should be pure like glass, you're clean like glass. So some people were almost self-hypnotized, being so insecure about their spiritual state, they actually thought they were made of glass. And this doesn't happen anymore. People don't think they're made of glass, but it was not too uncommon in the Middle Ages. And Cervantes has a story about this. What I mean with the alien abduction thing is you don't hear about people in trailer parks start claiming they were abducted by aliens until about the 50s when aliens appear in B movies and sci-fi horrors and stuff. So people will watch this and maybe they're not too connected to reality. Maybe they have a weird dream. Maybe it's self-hypnosis. They see things that aren't there. And they really think they were abducted by aliens. So I think it's kind of like the Middle Ages. People heard this metaphor a lot about glass, and they really thought they were made of glass. So he was the king right before France was almost completely ruined, and Joan of Arc had to come along and save things, and didn't do a good job of leading France, and no one does a good job of anything when they think they're made of glass. I think that's the moral.
Or of leading France. Nobody's particularly good at leading France for quite some time. That is interesting. I'd never heard that. How did he ultimately die, or did he get better, or did he die insane?
Yeah, he died insane, and he had some other stuff. Like, he thought he was St. George for about a year, and he wanted to put a dragon on his family crest, and his wife basically had to run things. That's what happens to a lot of these people where someone steps in. Maybe it's an uncle who acts as regent. Maybe it's someone else who's trying to gain power and they'll step in. And that's what his wife did. She wasn't French. She was German. She negotiated some pretty crappy terms with the English. And if Joan of Arc wouldn't have come along, then France would have been owned completely by Great Britain. So there you go. That's, and he just kind of like dithered out and died, and probably maybe still died thinking he was made of glass.
pack him in styrofoam in his coffin. Next, we come to somebody people are definitely familiar with the name of, Ivan the Terrible, one of history's great names, if not a monster.
Yeah, he was a pretty rough dude. He ruled in the 1500s, which, to be fair, is a rough time. You know, like I'll say this with Ivan. He might have a justification for people who argue in Ivan's favor, and plenty of Russians love to argue in Ivan's favor. sort of like the Ivan Drago of czars, where he did what he had to do for the times. And in the 1500s, the Russians are still dealing with some of the daughter states of the Mongol Empire. And like 300 years earlier, the Mongols killed like 50 million people. They killed so many people that global cooling actually happened, where farmers were killed and farmland, nothing grows there and it returns to forest. So forests regrow and CO2 plummets. So Genghis Khan caused global cooling. And that's kind of what the Russians were up against. And every few years, some of these Mongolic groups would come into Russian cities. They would kill thousands of men, capture women and children, take them to slave markets, sell them there. So anyway, that's a precursor for people who say Ivan did some nasty things, but he sort of had to during the times. Not saying it's true or not, but that's a background. Basically, he was sort of sadistic. He had his first killing at age 13. So you can think Game of Thrones with
late bloomer from my
book. I know. Yeah. When did Joffrey in Game of Thrones get his first murder? It's younger than that, right? So he murdered. There was a city called Novgorod that he thought might switch allegiance to another country during this time of war and defect. So he condoned this mass rape and murder of like hundreds of thousands of people, had fields burned, buildings looted. So people starved to death who weren't slaughtered. But the weird thing about Ivan is he was schizophrenic in that he like lived it up and he was like a baller in Vegas part of the time, but then other times he would renounce his way. So sometimes he was living in a monastery and acting like a monk, but he also had six wives and some of them he was married to at the same time. So he goes back and forth between Joe Exotic from Tiger King and I don't know what's the other, like, upright nerd goody two shoes.
Bill Gates.
Okay, there you go. Bill Gates. That's a good one. So he not only had lots of people murdered, which is sort of par for the course of that time, but was personally involved. And there's accounts that say he had people sewn up in bear skins and thrown into rivers and just murdering left and right. He murdered like no one else. But the argument is that that was sort of what you had to do to survive and keep things from collapsing. So that's Ivan's story.
Before we continue down the list, and we're about to get to somebody I literally know nothing about, so I'm excited to hear about it. But why is it that some people's reputations, it seems like they were all pretty horrible on one level or another back 2,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, the leaders. Why does some rise to the level, Ivan the Terrible? You know, my daughter's going to be 3 this month. She will learn the legend of Ivan the Terrible. It might not be taught in history class, but there'll be documentaries. There's a lot of attention paid to some people, whereas other people we know almost nothing about. Why? What is it that elevates some of these horrible people into lore and other people who are just as bad, if not worse, fade back into history?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's the trick of historians, because a lot of times, especially if it's far back in the past, 1,000 years, 2,000 years or more, we might only know about someone because of one source or one book, as it were, survives. So, and a lot of times this source is a chronicler, basically it's basically a press secretary in the past, somebody or a publicist, they're paid to say good things about you. So let's say it's 2000 years in the future, and the only thing we know about Hillary Clinton is written by Hillary Clinton's press secretary, and I'm with her information from the 2016 campaign, and that's all we have of her. Or what if the only thing we had of Donald Trump was the Jim Acosta biography that just came out, where so that's kind of like what we're dealing with, where like the Ivan the Terrible, that comes from people, mostly Germans who were living in Russia as traitors. They would call them that. The Ivan the Great comes from Russians who were there. So there's always kind of like two takes on people, and they sound like two completely different people. And that's the reason why. So yeah, that's what we have to deal with a lot.
Yeah, one man. Look, growing up as a kid, I hated Chris. I was a Red Wings fan in Detroit. I hated Chris Chelios. And then he was just a hell of a defenseman, and he gave us all kinds of trouble. And then he got traded to the Red Wings, and I loved Chris Chelios. So it's a matter of, if he's on my team, he's Ivan the Great.
If he's on another team, he's Ivan the Terrible. Now let's talk about Sultan Ibrahim the First. I have never heard of Sultan Ibrahim the First. I'm very interested to hear what this guy did.
I envy you, my friend, to be able to learn about him the first time. It's a I've studied sultans. My research and my doctorate was in the Ottoman Empire because I wanted to be as employable as possible. And
interpretive dance was not an option.
And I'm definitely laughing. I'm definitely laughing now with the economy. So, So he was a ruler in the 1600s, and the Ottoman Empire was interesting. So basically, a very long story short, the way it was set up, when the Sultan had sons, and he had a bunch of sons because he had a bunch of concubines, the firstborn son of his wasn't automatically the next Sultan. It could be any one of his sons who could become the next Sultan. In the early years of the empire, when the Sultan died, there'd be a civil war because all the sons are fighting for control. And they realized after a while, this is a pretty bad system to have a civil war every generation. So what they do is the guy who becomes Sultan, he figures, I am going to murder all of my brothers. So he'd murder all of his brothers and those brothers' sons, usually about 30 to 50 people. And
same.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right. No civil war, but people that really didn't like that. It's not a great way to begin your term in office. So by the time of Ibrahim, their solution was, okay, we have to make sure there's not a civil war, but the public really isn't. The demographics and the market research tells us they don't like this murder thing. So let's basically keep them in prison. We're not going to call it prison. It'll be kind of a nice part of the palace, a nice room with some stuff in it, be under quarantine like we are now. Well, if you think you're going crazy in a month or two of quarantine, what if your entire childhood is in quarantine? That was Ibrahim. He grew up in the palace under quarantine for like 20 years, basically, and expected to be murdered any day. His older brother was murdered. Other people around him were murdered. He wasn't murdered. He was told that he became the Sultan. So he goes from being under quarantine for two decades to ruling an empire that controls three continents, basically. So he basically decides, I'm going to make up for lost time and be a Bala in Vegas type of thing. So he wants to decorate his palace from floor to ceiling in fur. Puts on this massive tax on the empire, even though it's in the middle of a siege and people are starving in Istanbul. He really liked big, full-figured women. So he ordered his advisors, all right, find the biggest woman you can in the empire. They found a woman who weighed 400 pounds, which is pretty big back then, and brought her to Istanbul.
It's still pretty big. It's still pretty big.
He liked plus-size women, and he supported body positivity and Dove models and all that.
Yeah.
So she was carted to Istanbul in a very large cart and sort of the crown jewel in his harem. Soured on his harem after a while, had, according to one account, a couple hundred women thrown into the Bosphorus. And he really liked archery. So what he would do is practice with his bow and arrow with his servants in the palace. And the last thing is that
you don't get to gloss over that.
Okay,
part.
Okay.
He liked to like practice archery, like they would throw plates up or they would have to retrieve the arrows. I don't think that's what you're talking about.
He would hunting shoot his servants. At them like So he would shoot at them just to figure, OK, I need to practice my archery. There's no better prey than man.
The most dangerous prey.
Are
telling us anything. So he would just shoot randomly arrows at his servants.
He really is. If there's anyone like Joe Exotic, it would be him. And he had a collection of exotic animals, which almost all these sultans did. So when I was watching Tiger King with my wife, I thought, man, he's reminding me of a lot of these guys. He was, and of course, Ibrahim was a polygamist like Joe Exotic. And he loved Joe Exotic. I don't know if he shot at people. Probably, but Joe Exotic loved his guns.
Pointing a gun is enough. Yeah. You don't have to pull the trigger.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically if Joe Exotic were the head of an empire, that's what was happening with Ibrahim. And he's also killed a few years later and he's replaced by his son, who's about 6 years old.
Can't imagine why.
His son's about 6 years old, but people are saying, you know, he's going to do a better job than him. So, you know, let's just hang him and or strangle him and be done with it.
It would get my vote. Yeah. Next, we come to somebody that the people of the United States know fairly well, at least by reputation, King George III, the guy we fought a revolution against. And there was the, I'm thinking of King George V. Never mind. King George III. Go ahead.
But no, King you're George, right.
No, it was. Oh, wait, that's right. Because the movie was The Madness of King George III in the UK, and they cut off the third part because they thought an American audience would think it was a sequel, and they didn't know. I just remember that. All I remember from that is his blue pea. But he actually went insane. He went through in and out of sanity, didn't he?
Yeah, you're right. He had five bouts, and the first is the 1760s, and that was hidden pretty well. The next was the 1780s after the revolution, and they couldn't hide that one as well. So the blue pea, what that's all about is that musical and that movie, it's suggesting he had this blood disease called porphyria that a lot of other Europeans had because they were all sort of interbred. There was a lot of sort of faint inbreeding on the royal class back then, so They were kind of passing that around. You know, I'm going to say this about George III. It's easy to dunk on him, and you enjoy that he went crazy as an American, because our whole Declaration of Independence talks about how much he sucks, right? But he was a pretty upstanding guy. He didn't have a mistress, which puts you in like the top 1% of
back Europe, then. I thought you were assigned one at royal birth. I mean, farmers were banging everything they get their hands on. The king had everything at his disposal.
Yeah, I mean, like, not a mistress. Like, it's so he had that going for him. He was he wasn't as bad as other people, but we don't know what caused him to go crazy. Maybe it was this blood disease. Back then, when they were trying to cure you, they would usually make it worse. So he was given arsenic. He had like 300 times the normal healthy amount of arsenic when
healthy amount of arsenic. Yeah, my daily supplement of arsenic. I make sure I keep it just within that range.
I like the arsenic essential oil. It, you know, smells nice. So,
you know,
yeah. So when he started to lose it, a thing that he always did throughout the years was he'd have really long conversations with dead people, and whoever was talking back to him in his head was keeping up a pretty good conversation. It seems like they were having a really coherent back and forth. If I had an imaginary friend, they wouldn't have been as straightforward with me as his were with him. He loved farming, and for some reason, at some point, he thought that if he planted stake into the ground, then it would grow into a tree with stake growing off of it. And he really loved agriculture. He really loved botany, so he was called Farmer George. And one person said that he would shake hands with trees. At one point, he thought it was the Frederick the Great, his cousin. And again, he was having a long conversation with it. So, but to his credit, like, people would say about him, you know, he never spoke profanely, no matter how much he lost it. So he didn't keep it together, but he sort of kept it together in a way that other people didn't keep it together.
Now, people listening might go, well, where's the mass murder? Where's the genocide? This is about insane leaders, not about monsters. It just so happens that most of them are monsters in one way or another. Next. And you know what? Arguing with and having conversations with imaginary friends, there's nothing wrong with it. It's when you lose the argument that I think you're actually fully have gone insane over the deep end. Next is Mad King Ludwig II.
Yeah, so Ludwig, you might not know the name, but you know the castles that he made.
Neuschwanstein. I love Neuschwanstein. I've been there.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
I mean, most of us in quarantine were probably doing puzzles like we've never done before. If you're doing a puzzle with more than 100 pieces, you're probably doing a puzzle of Neuschwanstein. Basically, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's that castle that is the basis of Disney World.
It's beautiful. It's half empty. It's mostly empty, though. Mm-hmm. He never finished it, but it's beautiful with a weird, like, jungle room, I remember. It's just a bizarre thing with. Yeah, but you had to be insane to do that. But he had his own problems. He was also insane and spending like a drunken, insane person.
Yeah, he was he was king in a sweet spot. He was king in the late 1800s. So it's after the time when you really have any power as king. That's when you have parliaments now and prime ministers. So you don't really do much as king. But it's before the time when kings are completely worthless, like Harry and he won't become king. But, you know, you get what I'm saying. They basically appear in parades and they don't do anything. He still has access to his family's wealth, which is like several centuries worth of wealth that's built up. And he grew up pretty isolated, didn't have many friends. He had an overactive imagination. He loved stories. He loved German myth and German folklore about crusaders and knights and stuff like that. So he wanted to build castles like this, sort of like Don Quixote. But what if Don Quixote had billions of dollars? And he basically burns through all of Bavaria's money by building these castles that are awesome, but also completely useless. One, Haran Kimsey, it's sort of a bad photocopy of Versailles Palace. And he would have dinner there. He would, there would be three or four places set for dinner every night. And he would have imaginary conversations with Marie Antoinette and Louis XIV. And servants just kind of look at him like, what's going on? It's just, he would say things. He would hear people talk back to him and laugh at their jokes. He also liked high-speed midnight sleigh rides. So he lived close to the Alps, and he would tell his servants, even if it were in the middle of a blizzard and it's 2 a.m, all right, hitch up the sleigh. We're going on a sleigh ride. And they would go through at high speeds, and people would be riding behind him or in front of him. Sometimes people would fall off hills, and he would tell people to stop and say, hey, we're going to have a picnic now. Well, okay, it's in the middle of the blizzard, but I didn't slow him down. He just, it's sort of like what was going on in his head. He seemed to be having a good time in his own way.
But you can't blame him, though. I mean, he's an isolated world and an isolated life and seemingly endless wealth. Although the wealth was coming near an end, he was not another. He's one of these who's not a murderous dictator or murderous thug. But there's speculation not confirmed that he was killed because of the spending?
Yeah, so that's a good point. His death is really weird. Basically, he was on a walk with his physician after he was deposed. He was kicked out of power because people said he is mentally insane. He was declared mentally insane. And he went on a walk with his physician. He and his physician were found an hour or two later. They were both face down in a lake, dead, but it was in like 3 or 4 feet of water. There's just no way they could have drowned because it was way too shallow for that. So they don't know if it was a murder suicide, if the doctor strangled him and killed him and then killed himself. There was some other missing murderer. We don't know. It's super weird. It's one of the great unsolved cases. It's up there with DB Cooper as like an unsolved mystery.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So, well, I'll say this, like Ludwig, he bankrupts Bavaria. That's bad, but he kind of leaves behind a good legacy because Bavaria was this hick backwater of Germany at its time. And he wanted to use the money to turn it into a center of arts and culture. So he built up these castles. He was a patron of Richard Wagner, and Richard Wagner's compositions were able to be made because of Ludwig spending money on it. And today, when we think of Germany, we think of dudes in Lederhosen, like, oh yeah, everyone in Germany wears Lederhosen, right? And when you mention Lederhosen to Germans, like most of the time, they just shake their head and say, no, it's not all Germans. Hashtag not all Germans. That's Bavaria. It would be like saying to an American, oh yeah, you guys all wear 10-gallon hats and bolo ties, right? Like, no, it's Texas,
we don't.
Man.
We don't?
I'm wearing one right now. I mean, you can't see me, but I'm wearing one right now.
No, for those, if we are ever allowed to travel again, and you go to Bavaria and you go to Neuschwanstein, down at the base of Neuschwanstein is Hohenschwangau, and there is one of Wagner's pianos and a loaf of bread from this time period still sitting there under glass. He really loved that guy. So absolutely. Next week, actually, bring it into the modern-ish times and go back to the monster phase. Idi Amin. We've made movies about him. Tell us about Idi Amin.
Yeah, living in Uganda at that time, no fun at all.
Was there a good sweet spot where you wanted to live in Uganda?
honestly. Like, it's a bad time to live in Uganda, as opposed to what?
I've heard it's pretty nice now. It's on the upswing, but haven't been there, can't really say. So if any of y'all have ever watched Last King of Scotland, that's about Idi Amin. Great performance by Forrest Whitaker. Recommend it. Some have questioned the historical parts, whatever. But anyway, he was president shortly after Uganda got independence as a former British colony. And when he was in the army, he was a soldier when Uganda was a British colony, and British officers liked him. He knew how to get rough and aggressive and put down tribes that were messing with people. But the way he put them down was sometimes it was shooting at them. Sometimes it was hacking off limbs with a machete, or training his son, who was like 5 years old at the time, on how to hack people's limbs off with a machete. So this was his training ground.
Well, you don't want to do it wrong.
You gotta, if you're going to do it right. Right. So, right,
exactly.
So at the beginning of his presidency, some people think, okay, this is a guy who's a quote unquote true African. He's not a president who's educated at some European boarding school, but represents what the true people are like. But I mean, right at, very, very, very shortly into his presidency, he goes almost full Joseph Stalin, where he kills anyone who's a political threat. Then he kills advisors that he doesn't think are loyal. Then he just basically kills anyone who's not 200% loyal to him. And from the decade he was in power, there were something like 200,000 Ugandans killed, which that would be like 20 or 30 million Americans if we're just looking at proportion. And sort of the way that he got away with this is the media back then was as easy to manipulate as they are now, where you just like dangle a shiny object in front of them and they go off and run after it. And the way that he would escape a lot of scrutiny of the international press is when he was speaking to them, he would be the sort of like charming, silly buffoon character where he would make fun of England. He would ship Great Britain a bunch of bananas saying, hey, thanks for the good old days of, you know, leading us for our colonies. Or when Queen Elizabeth had her silver jubilee, her 25 years in power, he asked for a 25-year-old pair of her undergarments to mark the occasion. So he would just like act like a silly buffoon. He would show off his multiple wives, polygamist again, another Joe Exotic reference. But that just sort of like was a shield away from, like you said, the monster aspect where thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are being murdered. And it's not just that people are being murdered. It's that everyone is paranoid all the time. Like, you don't know who is a paid informant, who knows, has a friend in the secret police. If you talk to this guy, is he going to say something to somebody who will say something to somebody who will get you imprisoned and then tortured and murdered? You don't know. Everyone knew someone who has disappeared or who was murdered. Just not a great time to be in Uganda, like you said.
Cannibal too, or engaged in cannibalism.
That's what some people say. I mean, it's so hard to separate what's true and what's isn't true. Like, some people said he ate his victims, and other people said that he had thought a wife or a lover was cheating on him, so he had her limbs cut off and like her legs sewn to where arms were and arms sewed to where legs were. It's just, so those are some of the stories. It's ugh.
Lovely. The world's a better place with dead. Now, the next one is second to last. I'm not even going to I'm not going to be able to pronounce that name. So you go ahead and pronounce the leader of Turkmenistan.
Sapar Murat Niyazov.
Yeah, see, Sapar Murat Niyazov. Sounds like somebody saying something, playing a record backwards. Sapar Murat Niyazov. Paul is dead, man.
So he's, you know, let's make things a little more fun. That last one was a downer, so let's come back up a little bit. So he was president of Turkmenistan from the early 90s to 2006. And he was the guy I mentioned early on in our discussion who had the 80-foot-tall golden statue of himself that's always rotating to face the sun. And when he was the leader of the Turkmenistan Soviet Republic, when it was part of the Soviet Union, and he sort of learned the Joseph Stalin guide to leadership. And that means, okay, have plenty of statues of yourself, have posters of yourself, promote your self-image. And after he's president, he takes Joseph Stalin and he takes it to 11. He goes full Joseph Stalin. So it's not just posters of himself everywhere, which there were. It's not just statues of himself, which there were. He renames days of the week after himself and his dead mother. He renames months of the year. He renames an asteroid after himself and a city. He had a Turkmenbashi, that was his name, his honorary name, vodka after himself. And the Turkmenistan parliament gave him the honorary name Akbar Turkmenbashi, which literally means the great great leader of all Turkmen. So it'd be like if Donald Trump changed his name to super awesome America leader. Or
don't just give him any ideas.
Another thing is he thought that he had a lot of good advice to give to people. He sort of fashioned himself as a Tony Robbins or known for Oprah Winfrey or Dr. Oz. I've got spiritual and medical advice to give to people. So what I need
what
to
could
do
go wrong.
Right. I need to write a book, but it's not just a book, it's a holy book that is going to be more important than both the Bible and the Quran put together. And I know this because God himself appeared to me in a dream and said that anyone who reads this three times goes to heaven automatically. Okay, so I
that
have to
help with sales. That help with sales.
Endorsed by God.
Your own hard copy. You can't. It's only good for one use, because if you give it to somebody else, you can't. So everybody has to buy their own. That's what you should say about your book.
It's like endorsed by God on the front cover. I mean, it's quite a blurb right there. So he writes this book, which is kind of rough because he wasn't completely literate. So he probably had some help writing it. That's fair. And I've read parts of it. I'm going to be honest. I haven't read the whole thing, but it's weird. It's sort of like if you took
a guy declaring himself to be holy and saying that if you read this three times, you get to heaven. That book is weird. You're kidding me.
The great thing is, listeners, it is available for free online. So just look for Ruhname, Ruhname or Name. So it's kind of like bad self-help Tony Robbins. It's kind of like a really weird mythology of the history of Turkmenistan. And he doesn't seem to understand fictional people from true people, because he knows some of these stories about leaders in the past in Central Asia. And it would be sort of like if you were if a leader in England had absolute power, if the king had absolute power, and he writes a history that's part advice, but then also a history of England that begins with King Arthur, and then it mixes in Assassin's Creed, and then parts of a King Arthur movie, not one of the good ones, but like the Guy Ritchie one. And then some modern stuff.
Hasn't he suffered enough? He was married to Madonna. Leave him alone. He suffered enough.
He directed one of her movies too. That's rough.
That's how they met. It was horrible. Weird. So, okay, then we get back to another monster. We've had some lunatics. We've had some real monsters. Now we have a real living lunatic monster right now in North Korea, a nuclear-armed monster, which makes him a formidable force, and unlike all of the other, all the others could inflict hell on their neighbors and certainly on their own people, whereas this guy has his sights set on the whole world. I'm, of course, talking about Joe Biden. No. Kim Jong-il of North Korea. His son is still out there. But Kim Jong-il really set the standard for insane out there, got them the nuclear bomb that his lunatic, dwarf, obese son is now wielding. North Korea, people don't realize it's been screwed up for a very long time, generational, in the same family. Tell us about Kim Jong-il and what makes him better or worse or whatever than Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-un.
Wow, I'm very impressed at your North Korean dictator knowledge. Right. No one else I've ever talked to got all three of them right.
I just emptied the pot. I'm out of North Korean. I could say Pyongyang, and then I'm out. I'm empty. All my North Korean knowledge is gone.
You're in the top 1%, though, so that's really good. So I think Kim Jong-il, he's useful to understand kind of like the bigger question of all these people we've been talking about is, how do people get like this? How are they living on their own planet? They're completely at odds with what is actually real or not. And I mean, just like a little factoid to give you an idea of Kim Jong-il, he and North Korea claimed that when he was born, there was winter automatically changed to spring, and then a double rainbow appears in the sky. And he also said the first time he golfed, he was 36 under par and shot five holes in one.
Yeah, it was great. He won the Masters. He got the green jacket that year. It was amazing.
Tiger Woods asked him for advice. And I think, and people wonder, how can you say that? Because if you or I say that, people laugh at us, and they should laugh at us because that's ridiculous. He had his own particular path of getting to that place, but it's the same path that could get a Caligula or other rulers or people like a Fidel Castro or Muammar Gaddafi, who will stand up and give a 5-hour speech. And they think what they're saying is brilliant when they're just saying all the weird conspiracy theories that your uncle says at Thanksgiving. And what happens to him is, it's similar to if we look at celebrities and we think how are they so out of touch? How does Gal Gadot and other people sing Imagine on Instagram, and they think they're helping people in their mansions, and they're out of touch? Imagine you gave celebrities who are already out of touch their own private police force. Imagine they can kill people now. Imagine that there's really no one who can tell them no anymore. And as isolated as they are, now they're even more isolated. There's no one who questions what they're saying because they don't want to die. And that goes on for years. That goes on for decades. Imagine how deluded you could get. So if a out of touch celebrity is on a scale of 1 to 10, they're at a 2 or 3, give it enough time and people could climb up that ladder. And that's a factor of North Korea and a lot of these tin pot kingdoms, and these tin pot dictators. They have opposition liquidated. No one essentially tells them no.
And well, in North Korea, the Kim family is a god. They're gods. It's not even like they're your leader, respect them, fear them. It is that there's God right there. He's the only fat guy in a starving nation. Has to be God. How is he fat? We're so skinny. And it really is. Everybody is mandated to have a picture of him in their house. Don't they broadcast like words of devotion into everybody's house every day?
Right, they do. I mean, it sounds like a religious catechism. It's broadcasted into people's houses. It sounds like 1984. When we say that, usually we're exaggerating. And what's interesting about him, and then also this leader of Turkmenistan and other people, there's almost this innocence about them where they think the things that they're doing are good things. That somehow Kim Jong-un, the political philosophy in North Korea is that the supreme leader is the personification of the collective will of the people. And that's just a fancy pants way of saying that what's good for me is good for all of North Korea. If I'm wealthy and have Lamborghinis and party with Dennis Rodman like Kim Jong-un does, that's what the people want because I am the personification of the collective will of the people. So if you worship me, you're sort of celebrating North Korean greatness. When I live large while people starve, if I do ridiculous things like talk about annihilating America, but at the same time, I make my haircut look like Elvis, like Kim Jong-il did, somehow in your mind, you think this is a good thing. So I think that's what, if there's any unifying thing for the people, the 9 people in the book, they commit the fundamental sin of politics. And that's where they believe their own press. But like, not only do they believe it, it's like they're only truth, and they marinate it for years and decades, and that's how they get there.
Who is, because some of them, yeah, you can kind of understand, and I don't mean to sound sympathetic to the Kim family or to many of these people who are not murderers. I'm not sympathetic to the murderers at all. But in the world in which they were raised, especially the world that you described, like I imagine Leonardo DiCaprio's life. He's been famous since he's like 12. Not too many people around him tell him no. So if you hear something weird about him, it's because nobody will tell him no. When somebody says something really stupid, you're like, it's because there's nobody who can tell them no. If you're a Kim Jong-il or Un, Kim Il-sung, you can kind of blame because he knew better. But you are raised to believe this, that mm-hmm. you are divine, and nobody around you, for fear of your father killing them, will disagree with you. We'll slap your hand if you do some, your hands in the cookie jar or whatever. So you can kind of understand to a certain degree how these people are made, how they manage once they get the ability to look out beyond their world, as you just do in adulthood, how they maintain it is where the problem comes in. Would you say that all, is there a difference in your mind in sort of biographing these different people? Is there a big difference between insane and evil? And what would you say is the biggest difference? Because there are a lot of people who are insane and evil, and a lot of people who are evil who aren't necessarily genocidal murderers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a great point, because lots of people, millions of people struggle with mental illness, with depression. And the point is that I think these problems, mental illness problems, obviously don't make somebody evil. In fact, there's an argument that the greatest wartime leaders we've ever had these problems. Like Abraham Lincoln had well-documented cases of depression, and so did Winston Churchill, and Martin Luther King Jr. attempted suicide when he was younger. And some have argued that, like Abraham Lincoln or these others, it was that struggle that, because of it, not in spite of it, made them great, because they had battled and defeated their personal demons, and that's what gave them the strength to keep going in dark moments for everyone else. So it's sort of like being insane. When I use the word insane, I'm not just saying goofy or loco or insane in the membrane in the Cypress Hill sense of the word. But in the legal sense of the word, that you cannot distinguish right from wrong, and that's how you act out. So it seems like mental illness, it doesn't determine your character. It reveals your character, and it takes off the governors on being as terrible as possible. So some, like Ludwig, were a little bit goofy, but not murdering people left and right. And the others, like Idi Amin, were truly evil, and being insane just took all the governors off.
When you sit down and you make this list of nine, I imagine you had a general sense of these people. Obviously, that's how you chose them. Who did you learn the most about in doing research for this? And things that surprised you the most?
I think that somebody that surprised me was Caligula, because there are people who are, I wouldn't say Caligula supporters, but they're trying to resurrect him a little bit, saying, okay, the really weird stuff about him was written long after the time he died. And the people who wrote that stuff were probably trying, they might've been as part of an enemy political camp, and they were trying to make themselves look good, because if we make Caligula look as terrible as possible, that makes us look better. Some people think the same about Ottoman Sultan Ibrahim, that the people who wrote the histories were those that ordered his hit and his execution, and they wanted to make themselves look like they were on the right side of history by making him look as terrible and as crazy as possible. So that's something that was kind of interesting to see, that these really weird stories, was it somebody trying to make themselves look better and tweak the record just a little bit here and there? So that was kind of surprising to see, but he also very well could have been as crazy as sources say, because, again, coming back to Tiger King, which we always should, I mean, Joe Exotic is a real person who exists. And if we have Joe Exotics today, we had Joe Exotics in the past, and maybe one was Emperor.
That's true. The camera create Joe Exotic? That's a question we may never know. Who's the craziest? Who's the most evil of these men? And why are they all men? What about the ladies?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, disassociated from reality. Like if you took Gwyneth Paltrow and made her empress, totally. I mean, she could have been on this list in a way. There's just more information about the guys. So that's how they're all there. But if I do a second edition, I'll keep that in mind. Craziest, I got to give it to Turkmenbashi. I mean, it's that golden statue that rotates to always face the sun. I think that that's number one right there. It's like Nebuchadnezzar. He just takes the cake. I think that's what gives him the gold medal. Worst is Idi Amin. He was sadistic. He loved violence, but Ivan, you can say it was to protect Russia. There's at least an argument to be made. And in the 1500s, kings killed their enemies left and right. So you could argue it was the times, but Idi Amin was just brutal in every way possible. There's nothing that he did that was good for anybody, and he enjoyed it. And he made the world worse in every way you could. So history's greatest monsters. Yep. Idi Amin's up there.
There you go. Learn about all the men we did. There's a lot. We gave you the skeletal structure. There's a lot of meat on the bones in the book. History's 9 most insane rulers. The author right there, Scott Rick. Congratulations on the book. Comes out Tuesday. Order it online. Does your picture in your book jacket have your mustache?
It's pre-mustache. Sorry, everyone.
There you go. There you go. So you can pencil that in there.
Send it
you.
To me and I'll put the Sharpie on there and there send it back.
Congratulations on the book and good luck with it. And thanks for coming on today.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for this week. It's the weekend already, which means you just still continue to binge watch. Watch Tiger King. We've heard enough about it today. Thank you for sharing and all that stuff. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good one.